The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Let's talk about safety. Yours and your family's. If you don't have a great flashlight for each of them to carry in their pocket, you're making a huge mistake. Hey, it's Brad Staggs. I want to tell you how you can save 15% off one of the most durable, lightweight, and bright flashlights that literally fits in the palm of your hand. I'm holding one right now. It's incredible. The Surefire Sidekick is made of the highest quality materials right here in the USA. It has a 300 lumen max vision beam with three different power settings. This will shine over 50 meters. What that means is you can stand in your front yard and shine at your neighbor's house three doors down. It's amazing. The battery lasts up to 45 hours. Plus, it's backed by Surefire's no hassle guarantee of quality, which is why it's trusted by more cops and special ops guys than any other brand. You ask a cop if they know about Surefire, they'll say yes. Keep your loved ones safe. Get them all a Sidekick. It's available in pink, white, or tactical black. Go to blazesurefire.com and save 15%. Blazesurefire.com.
Glenn Beck, The Blaze Radio Network.
Senator Ben Sasse, we'd like to treat you with respect, and then we saw the pictures of you in the red shirts, and
What it is? It's reminiscent of, remember the book that Arlen Specter wrote, where he talked about the Senate bathhouse?
Yeah, that's right.
John Thune was naked in the hot tub.
Yeah.
We made tender love for
I don't think you wrote that, but Ben Sasse, welcome to the program, sir.
I am here just to be your straight man.
Wow. Unfortunate timing for you to be on this program after these pictures are trending now.
Yeah, I think my phone's breaking up, but it's been good. I've enjoyed the interview. Thanks for the time.
not a problem. Do you stand by, I'm sure you stand by the red shorts, but how about the little pencil legs?
Wow. Pencil legs. That's too soon, brother.
Too soon? I'm sorry. Okay. All right.
Well, to be honest, I'm just happy I'm not wearing Umbros, because there's a lot of mornings where I would have been in 1992 garb.
Yeah. So, well, we'll come back in about 20 minutes. It won't be too soon. I want to talk to you about your book, The Vanishing American Adult, which I think you are spot on so much. We were kicking around that we believe that there should be a constitutional amendment that makes it illegal for any senator to write a book because they usually don't have anything to say. And I mean, who the hell do you think you are writing a book?
I am. If the book has a little bit of substance, I'm ashamed. I apologize.
All right. Okay. All right.
Better next time.
Okay. I do want to get to the book, but can we start with the news of the day and the storm that is happening in Washington, D.C.? Can you tell us the weather pattern?
Yeah, there's weather and there's climate, right?
Yeah.
So let's talk about weather as you want to, but let's be sure we also then back up and put it in the context
of climate.
Because the chaos here isn't just the last 4 months. It isn't just the last 18 months. It's not just this presidential cycle. It's that for a heck of a long time, we've forgotten to do basic civics. And when you don't do basic civics, you lose that sense of what politics are for. Because I'm of the one cheer for politics school. Zero cheers doesn't work. The world's broken. And so you need a framework for liberty. You need security. We need spies. We need to protect sources and methods. We need to have clarity about when and what foreign interventions we do and don't do, and what allies we support and not. But you don't want Washington to be the center of the world, and 5 of the 7 richest counties in America are now here. That's because we've not been doing civics, and so there's a drift toward government filling that vacuum.
What is the forecast for any of the president's initiatives going through? Tax cuts, health care, the border, with all of this going on, the wall. I mean, what is any of it going to come? Is it happening?
I really hope. I obviously overwhelmingly hope, and partly believe some of it will still happen. There will be some movement on an agenda, but the reality is there's just not much of a decision-making process in the White House right now, with a really big carve-out, which is on the national security side. General McMaster is a really good pick by the president, and he's doing a really good job. The president has named a bunch of exceptional people on the foreign policy and national security space. So Mattis is arguably the most impressive person at the Pentagon in a half a century, for example. And those folks are working together, trying to develop a strategy. You know, the president's planning to still leave town tomorrow night and go to the Middle East. And his idea about trying to foster and facilitate more Arab-Sunni cooperation as a counter force against, you know, the last administration's willingness to let Iran expand its sphere of influence. Lots of things happening there that are important and worth deliberating about. The problem is, on the domestic policy and the economic policy side, there's really not any decision-making process inside the White House.
Well, so
you just have kitty soccer.
He's just, that's exactly right. He has really done a great job on the security side, especially with foreign policy and the Pentagon. I think McMaster, tremendous. However, where are the Republicans? I mean, you have the greatest cover going on right now. I mean, Barack Obama used to try to overwhelm the system and have the news cycle going out of control, so you couldn't pay attention to anything. You didn't know what to watch. And I used to say on Fox all the time, watch the other hand. Well, there is no other hand here. Can anyone in Congress actually start to put together some proposals that the president only has to sign?
Here let's distinguish between what should happen and what is really possible, because one of the places where I've changed in the 2.5 years I've been here is I still believe that what should happen is the legislature, as the Article I branch, should be the place where policy deliberation and initiative happen.
Right.
But now, descriptively, the reality is since the rise of television, since the late 40s, early 50s, when television became the main way that we communicate together, and now let's call it television, let's call it moving imagery as opposed to print-based culture, right? An image-based culture. So now the rise of digital media. Descriptively, you've really never had any big things happen in Washington the last 6 or 7 decades if the president wasn't using the bully pulpit to focus attention on one issue. And right now, obviously for lots of reasons, this White House doesn't have any kind of clarity about policy initiatives. And so they kind of bounce around from thing to thing. That doesn't exonerate the Congress. The Congress has a 9% approval rating, and to quote my wife, that seems insanely too high. So the Congress is not doing its work, but neither of these two political parties have had clarity of an agenda for the American people for, you know, a decade, 2 decades. And so right now, both parties' main job, they think, is to flit about doing hot take to hot take and mainly saying that the other people are even worse than we are. That's different than casting a vision. You get back in. But the particular visions we should talk about, but as a descriptive matter, we should admit that absent a bully pulpit from the White House to guide a domestic or economic policy agenda, it's not very likely that it'll go forward.
Why is that, though? I mean, you guys can come up with the rules. You guys can pass the laws. You guys can
hard. It's not that hard. Spending. It's not that hard.
But spending is really mostly about entitlements now, and the public doesn't seem to want us to focus on entitlements. We still should, and I would gladly lose. Right, I've run for one thing once in my life. Politics are not the center of my life or identity. I would gladly try to have a big conversation about actually being honest with the American people about entitlements. Most people here have zero desire to do that. I thought until the last presidential cycle, only the Democrats were indifferent to whether or not we bankrupted our children. But now, when you had 17 Republican candidates for president, and 15 of the 17 started the election cycle saying we need to tell the truth about entitlements. Only 2 didn't, and it seems like the public didn't really care. There isn't enough domestic discretionary spending that can possibly make a difference to move the needle. I'll give you one stat. When Kennedy was president, 52% of our federal spending was national security. 1% was health entitlements. Today, 71% of our spending is 5 entitlement programs, and the remaining 29% of all federal spending is half and half, defense and non-defense discretionary spending.
Wow.
Well, I think we underinvest in defense. I can make a bunch of cases about why I believe that. The 14.5% that's non-defense discretionary, you just can't solve the problems of bankrupting our kids there, even if you took all of it away. The problem is in entitlements, and there's no political will or courage here to tackle that.
But hang on just a second. Is there enough political will? Forget about the courage and the can you muster up enough will to get a consensus on something because with this swirling around, the press is so busy feeding in the bloody water that I think you guys could get almost anything through at this point.
So let's talk about Obamacare entitlements as an example, about why so many Republicans don't seem to actually want to repeal and replace Obamacare. We could then all talk technical stuff about why it takes 60 votes to do most things in the Senate. We only have 52 senators, so you got to do reconciliation, which is only a subset. But for a minute, just bracket all that. Substantively, there are 50 Republicans. We have the vice president. So we need 50 of the 52 of us to do anything at all. And then you could use Mike Pence as the tiebreaker. You'd need 50 of 52 of us to agree what's wrong in American health care. I have very well-formulated views. You can argue with me, but I have a clear sense of what I think is wrong in American health care. And though Obamacare exacerbated lots of problems, it isn't the case that the problems of American health care just began 8 years ago. The American health care system had unsustainable, you know, premium growth of 2.5 times inflationary growth annually for year on year on year on year. Why is it that we never get higher quality, lower cost care in American health care? There's a technical business case and policy argument for why that is. I didn't know before I got here that most Republicans don't really understand that or want to fix that. You have Republicans who really think the worst part of Obamacare is the Cadillac tax. That's insane. It's a tiny, tiny little piece of the program, and you could debate the merits of whether or not a tax on employer-sponsored insurance that equalized the individual market is good or bad policy, but it's a tiny part of what the story is in Obamacare, and we seemingly have Republicans who have so little clarity about a vision for a system of health care where you'd have an insurance policy that's portable across job and geographic change for American families, which is what we need in American health care. More and more jobs are going to get shorter and shorter, and most of the uninsurance in American life is from people changing jobs.
So
it's
Ben,
not from health status.
So
it's
Ben, when does somebody like you and a group of you, even if it's three or five, when does a group of you say basically what the Republicans said in the 1850s, neither party is serious. I'm not going to play this game anymore. And in a very short period of time without social media, what started as about 20 people elected the president in 1860. What is a tipping point? Because I hear this from Republicans all the time, and you're seeing the number of people who are saying, I'm not having anything to do with the Republican Party.
Yeah.
I'm not having anything to do with the Democratic Party. There is a large, growing number of people who are sick of both of them. When is it that your guys are going to just come out and say, I can't do it anymore? Because it's all lies.
Well said. So let's unpack it a little bit. I'm third or fourth most conservative guy in the Senate by voting record, but I'm not very partisan in that I'm very unimpressed with both of these parties. So I have thought of my calling and my approach to this job has been that I think of myself as functionally an independent who caucuses with the Republicans. And so when you have Republican versus Democratic fights on the things that we're voting on now, I'm not just Republican. I'm, you know, at the conservative end of the Republican continuum. So I am Republican when the choice is Republican versus Democrat. But what I'm really for is limited government. I'm for families and mediating institutions and markets, and I'm for the future in that we should be talking about the challenges of 10 and 15 and 20 years from now before they're fully upon us with the way cyber is going to remake warfare, for example. And so I am trying to have a conversation that is, okay, fine, on the continuum of stuff, in my mind, I'm sort of, I have three levels of this. The bottom level is right to left continuum on small policy. Then one layer above that is right to left continuum on the bigger policies that we know how to think about right now, but there's not a lot of political courage or will. That's stuff like entitlement reform. What would a portable healthcare system really look like? But then above that, there's another tier, which is the most important one, which is basic civics education and what are we trying to do as a people in America? Because America is the most exceptional nation in the history of the world because we believe in the dignity of 320 million Americans. We believe in the dignity of 7 billion people that God gives rights to by nature, and government is a shared project to secure those rights, and we need to pass on that understanding of a republic. And right now, we've allowed our foundations to erode for so long that we don't have a shared American narrative, so a bunch of people, you know, sort of reduced down to tribe. And when you're lonely at home, which is a lot of what's happening in America right now, as we hollow out these local institutions, people are projecting more onto politics. These two parties aren't worthy of projecting your grand hopes and dreams on. Parties are tools, and these tools are pretty spent and exhausted. So I'll stop here. But to your point, Glenn, I do think these two parties are going to be disrupted and disintermediated. That doesn't mean I'm for a mushy middle between these two.
No.
For a conservatism that goes beyond this present moment of constant short-termist kitty soccer.
I will tell you, just what I heard was one of the most stirring and exciting things I've heard from any leader in a long time. I'm just thinking about the different states. Does Nebraska have a rule about running for Senate and, let's say, president at the same time?
Yeah, the only thing I've ever looked at is Noxious Weed Control Board and Husker Offensive Coordinator. So you're talking to the wrong guy.
Talking to the wrong guy. We should check. You should check into that because you're up for re-election in 2020, and that's the same year there's a presidential election.
Yeah, I'm not great with math. I don't know about that stuff. I was told there would be no math.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah. We were told there wouldn't be any embarrassing pictures of you and Chuck Schumer too. So, is it still too soon?
I think that's probably been photoshopped. I think you should move on.
The vanishing.
Since we've been on the phone, though, somebody handed me a Photoshop version of it that has Schumer with a huge joint in his hand in the photo now. We should doubt the veracity of all these photos.
I mean, you do look like Cheech and Chong sitting there. You really do. What was the?
Open up, man. It's me, Dave.
What was going on there in those pictures, Ben?
What were we talking about?
So I work out early in the morning, and then I sneak outside the gym and start out the day talking to my kids on the phone, and I do some radio. And so I was sitting outside the Russell Building where our gym is, getting ready to do some radio, and Cotton came up, and he and I were talking some national security stuff.
Okay, what I heard here, I hate to interrupt you, you are a sitting senator, but what we heard here is he starts his day smoking pot with Chuck Schumer every day. Back in a minute, Ben Sasse.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
We had to see for ourselves if Upside.com really saves money on business travel and give you a big gift card every trip. Well, we went to Upside, and in less than 2 minutes, not only did we save $300 for a business trip to Phoenix, we got a $145 gift card as well. Go to Upside.com right now and use the promo code Beck, and you'll get yourself a $100 Amazon gift card your first trip. Save big on your travel and get a big gift card every single trip. Upside.com. That's Upside.com. Minimum purchase required. See site for complete details.